Well, I'm going to start the show by making quite an incredible announcement. Yeah, this is going to shake your booty. I have decided, after talking extensively with my family, which was nice to do for a change, we deliberated back and forth. We had a round table. We used to have a round table. We got rid of it because it was starting to crack in the middle. But we got around a table, and we talked back and forth amongst ourselves in a private, very serious setting. And I said to my family, I'm considering running for president of the United States, but I need your support. I need your backing. I need your okay. I need your love. I need everything from you. I need money. I need money from you. And after much deliberation, we decided that I indeed will be throwing my hat into the fire. Is that the expression? And I will be amongst the other nearly 250 people who are running for president, trying to defeat Donald Trump. I, ladies and gentlemen, formally announce my candidacy for the President of the United States. Yes, I am running very quickly. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am running. You're saying, Ron, are you going to run as a Republican? No. Are you going to run as a Democrat? No. I have spoken to many families in the area, and I have gotten the full support of the Tupperware Party. Yes, I'm running on plastics, but that's where I feel I can make the most impression upon the American public. I have had a connection with the Tupperware Party that goes back for centuries. I had a couple of Tupperware parties at my house and sold a 5-bowl Tupperware set, which no one in that company had been able to do for an entire year. The Tupperware Party saw that I had a talent was as one of their own, and now is endorsing me. I am a member of the Tupperware Party, and I'll be running for your President of the United States. I take no pride in this. I'm not doing it because I want power, like Trump. I'm not doing it because I want fame and fortune. I'm not doing it because I want to build hotels in foreign countries, although that would be nice to put up a couple of comfort inns. No, I'm doing it because I care. Also because I'm bored. I have nothing else to do. So I figured, who has more time on their hands but a talk show host who's in touch with every subject and yet certainly doesn't really care about much of anything? So my friends, quote-unquote friends, air quote friends, most of them are on Facebook and I don't know who they are. I am now running for President of the United States. I hope I get your vote. I expect it. It's the least you can do. I don't charge you to listen to this thing. That's all I ask, is your vote in 2020 as I seek to be the next President of the United States.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Yes, it's true. I am running. I think there's 24 or 25 of us now that are running for president. I figured, what the hell? This is a what the hell kind of thing. But I think I'd actually be good at it. Well, a little bit. Good as anybody else. I have a very clean record. I have a record that was put out by the Beatles in 64, and I still have it, and I clean it every once in a while. My record's very clean. I've never been arrested, as far as I remember. I know how to do stuff. When I was in junior high school, in shop class, I made a ceramic ashtray, which I presented to my mother on her birthday, and she said, "Ron, I don't smoke." And I said, "Tough, this is what I made in the class, and you're going to like it because you're my mother." That's the kind of force that I exude and that I will use to be your next president. A lot of people ask me where I stand on certain issues. And my answer is, I stand over there. As a matter of fact, I stand on so many issues that sometimes I have to sit down, because that's a lot of standing. Some people say, "Ron, are you too old to be president?" And I say, "What? I can't hear you. My ears are failing me." Of course I'm not too old. Are you kidding me? Look at the other people. Trump is like 70-something, and Biden's 70-something, and I think Bernie Sanders is like 127, so no. Am I old enough to be president? Not mentally, but physically, yes. So I'm going to take a shot at it, kids, and I ask for your support. How am I going to be doing this? How am I going to be bringing my message to the public? Well, unlike the other candidates that hold rallies in public places and have these grassroots kind of things, I'm not going to use the grassroots. They were a fine band, although there were many versions of the grassroots, if you remember some of their greatest hits. There were all different members involved. But I'm not going to be using the grassroots music. I'm going to be visiting bars and cocktail lounges all across this country. I figure that way, no matter what I say, they'll be so shit-faced, they'll vote for me anyway. So that's my platform. I'll be having a platform. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the only problem is moving into the White House. I have so much junk in my house that I'm going to have to have, I'm going to have to call 1-800-JUNK and have them pick up a lot of my stuff that's been accumulating over the years. It's not being president, it's moving. It's just, I don't really feel like moving right now. Actually, I never felt like moving. As soon as I turned 50 years old, I stopped moving completely. And I'm not talking about house to house. I just don't move. I just sit in a chair and watch television, or lie in bed and watch television. I don't move very much. So moving to the White House is going to be a little bit of a problem. Traveling in that helicopter? I don't think so. Air Force One? No, no. I don't know if the pilots are properly trained, because Boeing, I think, built that aircraft one, and I don't trust it. So I'll be doing most of my traveling bicycle. Anyway, and I'm not going to move my whole family into the White House, because that's just a distraction. They're going to stay where they are. Now, this is going to work out really well for me. I really think so. When I address the people of the United States, I'll be opening up the address with part of my comedy act that I used to do in New York. Similar to what Trump does when he holds a rally, he throws in comedy, only it's through the whole thing and it's not funny. The other thing is, I think I'm going to have to change my underpants on a regular basis because I have to be transparent. And I don't know, I guess I'll have people at that point, so. All right, and now what I'm going to do is, I'm kicking off my campaign right here on this show, by the way. I figure I owe that to myself. Tomorrow I'm going on The View. It's not true, I'm lying. But what president doesn't? If all the presidents lie, why can't I do it? I think it's a mark of a good president is to lie. I am going to answer some questions people have written in, sent me emails, and I'm going to answer policy questions right now. Here's the first question. This is from Mary in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Mary says, what is your policy? What are some of your policies? I have a house insurance, a home insurance policy, where I cover just about everything in the house, in a house. I have an auto insurance policy that covers myself in case I'm in an accident or someone dings my car, something like that. I believe it's a $750 deductible, could be $500. I'm not too sure, Mary, but thanks for your question. Okay, let's see what else we have email-wise. How do you feel about the conflict in Afghanistan? It's terrible. It's just terrible. It's another question from Joseph Skamish. Is it Skamish, Joseph? Skamish? I'm sorry. He is from Dayton, Ohio, and he says, how do you feel about the rising tensions with Iran? I think it's just horrible, Joseph. I think it's just horrible. Arlene Factious from, what does this say? What does this say? Phoenix, Arizona. She wants to know, why I can't read this really, spelling is awful. What is this? Oh, yeah. What would you do about the environment? Do you believe in climate change? Whew, that's a tough one. I believe in it, yes. Can I save the planet? Yes. Will I make a difference in our attitude on climate change? Yes. I hope I've answered your question. I truly believe that there is changing going on. The polar ice caps are melting, which is not funny. And I believe our planet is in jeopardy. That's why I'm going to increase funding to develop Mars and put some McDonald's and Burger King's up there. And obviously there'll be a CVS and a Starbucks. And then we're going to start to colonize people. Everybody that I can't stand, which is most of the population, I'm going to put on shuttles to Mars, and they are to live on Mars and leave me the hell alone. Okay, let's see what else we have here. Marsha Limschitz, is it? Limschitz, okay. Marsha Limschitz from San Francisco, California. She says, how would you decrease the deficit, which is the highest it's ever been? Well, thanks to my predecessor, Donald Trump, the national deficit is the worst it's ever been. We owe more money to China than ever before. How will I decrease the deficit? We're working on it, and I'll get back to you Thursday. This is a long email here. Craig from Biloxi, Mississippi. Craig wants to know, what is this? Oh, would you be as friendly to Russia as Trump is? Where's this Russia place that you're talking about? I'm not familiar. Next question here. Next question. How do you feel about collusion? Wow. I mean, it's a horrible disease, and I've spoken about this very frequently. Go to your doctor once a year, get annual checkups. Collusion is a horrible thing. Usually it's hereditary. It manifests itself with oozing sores and pus, and it's disgusting. But researchers are trying to come up with a cure, and check for collusion, seriously. And if you know somebody with collusion, be nice to them. They don't have very long. I think that's enough questions. I think I've answered just about everything here. As the days go on, I will be a little bit more forthcoming. I will be coming forth a bit more. And you'll learn a little bit more about me that you don't already know. I am basically a very grumpy jerk, which is perfect for the office of President of the United States. I should fit right in. I get along with people as long as they don't talk ever. And I think I'm a voice of the people. I can do about 5 or 6 different voices of people that I've met. I can imitate them very well. So I am a voice of the people. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I always get asked, do I have any baggage? This is especially when I go to the airport and I'm traveling. The TSA officials ask me, do I have any baggage? And I always say, well, no more than anybody else. There's one dark period of my life, the power went out for about a week, and that was a problem. No, I actually, this is a little embarrassing, my parents wanted to get me into a specific school, and they built a library wing for $5 million to coerce the school to let me in. And eventually that library wing was built, thanks to my parents, and I did get into the school. It was the Whittier kindergarten school. Yeah, it was kindergarten, but I was having trouble getting in. So my parents had to build a library. There was only children's books in it, obviously, because it was a kindergarten school, but nonetheless, I'm a little embarrassed about that. I didn't do it. My parents did. So that's not my fault. I was just a young child. I didn't know what the hell's going on. That's the only thing in my life that would cause any type of controversy. I've always treated women well. I've always put them on a pedestal. It's easy to see up their dress. Hey, that's disgusting. That's stupid. But anyway, and that was a joke. It's not presidential at all. Oh, by the way, I don't tweet. I have nothing to do with twats whatsoever. I don't know how to tweet. I do have a Twitter account, but I've never really... I think I used it once just to see if it worked. Other than that, I've never used it. So I think I'm good with that. You'll never hear from me. If I'm your president, you'll never hear from me. You won't even know I'm there. Don't worry, you won't even know I'm there. There'll be no news about me. There'll be no news reports about anything I've done because I'm not going to do shit. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to I'm just gonna move in. I'm gonna occupy the place. I'm gonna bring my stuff up, and you know, and fill up a dresser drawer upstairs in the family area of the White House. Other than that, we're gonna have a lot of parties. We're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be good times. Good times gonna roll. I have an open administration. Anybody can visit the White House anytime as long as I'm not there. I really don't care. I don't care about that at all.
Gentlemen, did you ever notice that it always seems to be the ladies who pamper themselves with a spa day, with the mani-pedi and the facials and the massage? Do you ever think maybe you'd like to have a special day for yourself, but you are afraid it might be a little gay? Well, good news, gentlemen. Now you can have your own special spa day at Ramon Ramirez's Not-So-Gay Salon for Men. Let Ramon Ramirez take the stress off a tough day with a long, deep massage. It's not gay, it's therapeutic. After you relax, Ramon Ramirez will use special oils and lotions and maybe clean up some of your hairier man parts. It's not gay, it's hygienic. A lot of guys are doing it. Then it's time to kick back and let it all hang out in a long steam room session with Ramon Ramirez. It's not gay, much. So gentlemen, why wait? It's time for you to have a great day for yourself at Ramon Ramirez's Not So Gay Salon for Men. Please, no fat guys.
A lot of people say, you know, there are a lot of qualified women running for president, Ron. Why do you think that as a middle-aged white man that you could possibly win? And my answer is, I probably don't have a chance. I hope that an intelligent woman does win. Who would I choose as my running mate? Kim Kardashian, because she has a lot of outfits. And apparently all the news organizations care about in regards to a first lady, if it is a lady, it's just what outfits they have, what they wore that shocked the public at a certain gala, something like that. So I'm going to choose Kim Kardashian because she does have the wardrobe for it. She doesn't mind being in public. She's very attractive, I've been told. Never seen any pictures of her. She has a very successful television show about absolutely nothing. So I would choose her, actually, as my running mate. Also as my playmate. I think that would also be fun when there's nothing to do. Just to play around with her, you know. Go to places and just play. Just play around, you know. Take her down to Chuck E. Cheese and we can go down that little plastic ball shoot thing, you know. And just play around with her a little bit. I don't see anything wrong with that. Anyway, that's what I'm going to do. You'll hear a little bit more about it as time goes on. But I'm doing it, man. I am doing it. If the mayor of the city of New York, Bill de Blasio, can run for president, well, damn it, so can I. Not that I'm the mayor of any city, but I think that's a plus in my column, to be honest with you. People who have known me through the years know that I'm fair, compassionate. I can't go on. That is so funny, isn't it? All right, fine. Along the same lines, my guest today is, we're not really talking about presidential candidates, but we are talking about the Constitution, all that stuff, and how our religious beliefs meld into how the country is run, and there's supposed to be a separation between church and state. But apparently there probably isn't, and there are many examples of that. And he's written a book that is quite revealing, and it's going to be part of my presidential platform, as a matter of fact. So let's say hello to our guest. Seriously, this is interesting stuff. Let's say hello. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm well, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you here. Andrew Sodell joins us now. His book is The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. And interesting subject matter. We've talked about the division between church and state, in which it seems to me it's more of a marriage. But nonetheless, your book looks into the connection between religion and specifically Christian nationalism as far as how this country is put together, its rules and regulations and judicial system, etc. Let me start from the beginning. As far as I'm concerned, the separation of church and state, no matter what we're talking about, yet I see the marriage of that on money and on our slogans. I mean, it. Yet you're saying that the founding fathers did not base everything on religion.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And if you read part four of the book, The Founding Myth, it actually goes over all those different slogans that you just mentioned and a few more and explains where they came from. And it turns out that none of those is from the founding generation. But the basic question that I wanted to ask in the book was, did Judeo-Christian principles positively influence the founding of the United States? And the answer to that is no, they simply did not. And in fact, Judeo-Christian principles are thoroughly opposed to the principles on which the United States was built. And the two systems differ and conflict to such a degree that it's fair to say that Christian nationalism is un-American.
Of course, you can't put yourself in the head of the founding fathers, but at the same time, I guess what you're saying is you're seeing by example that that was not the intention. Did it leave doors open?
Well, and you can't put yourself in the head of the founding fathers, but you can look at what they wrote, and you can do what I did in this book, which is compare the principles of Judeo-Christianity, things like the idea of hell, like vicarious redemption of Jesus. Look at the Ten Commandments and compare them to the principles that are laid out in our Constitution and in our Bill of Rights or in the Declaration of Independence. And you can see how they don't just not agree, but they actually conflict.
Yeah. It's so difficult not to infiltrate religion into our ways and mores and the way that we supposedly judicially run this country. Because there are so many openings thereof. In other words, it's hard to figure out whether this is a country of principle or country of political persuasion. And I guess at this time in history, that's the basic question.
And I think you're right. And I think we are seeing a deliberate attempt to rewrite not just American history, but the American identity right now.
Yes.
And that is what Christian nationalism is seeking to do. They're trying to say that to be an American is to be a Christian, and to be a Christian is to be an American. But patriotism has no religion.
Right.
And I mean, to me, this is a fight that we can't afford to lose.
Yeah, that's the medicine show. It's confusing patriotism with what you're talking about. Specifically with this particular president, an obvious embracing of that particular sect of this country, actually considering it to be his success, and the subsequent manipulation of these people to make it just a question of religion and patriotism, which is all garbled up.
And that's exactly the point, because Donald Trump was elected president because of Christian nationalism.
The number one
factor that indicated a Trump elector was not their religion, and it was not even their political party or their socioeconomic status. It was whether or not they thought the United States was founded as a Christian nation.
Yeah.
And that's pretty remarkable. He was carried into office on a wave of lies, the lies that underlie Christian nationalism. And that's what I try to debunk in the founding myth.
But it's odd, because in other presidential campaigns, if the president had any type of sexual misconduct or anything that was immoral, they'd be kicked out of the race out the window. But what happened here where he was embraced despite his the opposite of what this group stands for, in a sense?
Well, part of that is that I don't think it's the opposite of what the group stands for, and that's a point that I try to make in the book.
I see.
And the second part of it also is that these Christian nationalists have been taught from often, you know, their earliest memory to believe in these authoritarian supernatural figures.
Right.
And one of the points that I try to make in the book is that Donald Trump has essentially substituted himself for that figure. And there's actually data alarmingly to back that idea up.
Where did this phrase "one nation under God" come from?
So this is in part four of the founding myth. So "under God" was added to the pledge in the 1950s, which was of the Red Scare. Yeah, it was also when we got the National Day of Prayer in the same 5-year stretch. They built the Capitol Prayer Room then. "In God We Trust" was added to paper money at the same time.
Wow.
So you have "one nation indivisible." That was how the pledge used to read. It was this beautiful post-Civil War sentiment trying to unify the country. And then you have it being amended and edited to literally divide the indivisible with God, with religion, which historically is one of the most divisive forces known to humanity.
Do you have any grasp on the percentage of voting Americans who grab onto the Christian nationalism?
I mean, it was enough to elect Donald Trump as president.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it was enough electorally to,
To elect him as president. Right. And we're talking voters, presumably. Right. That's only when you're talking about elections. Right. Overall, it's a very loud vocal minority. But the problem is that it these lies on which the Christian nationalist identity are built, they are driving public policy now. Mm-hmm. Judges are deciding cases based on these lies and myths.
Correct.
And it is really alarming the influence that it has at this point in our history.
It is quite alarming. Well, I could talk to you for hours, but I can't do that. So
I'd love to, Ron. Sorry.
It's "The Founding Myth: Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American." It's available everywhere. It's a book certainly worth reading, and if for any reason it's to find our history and why we are where we are, and when you understand that, good thinking people can somewhat get this. Thank you, Andrew, for your time. It's fascinating. How do we follow you and your writings and all that?
I'm on social media, Andrew L. Seidel, and I work for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is ffrf.org. Those are the two best places to find me.
Fantastic. Good speaking to you today.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Wow. Huh? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pick that book up. It's pick it up and read it. I mean, just don't pick it up. Pick it up and read it. It's incredible. All right, I'm exhausted. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted. I can't keep this up for much longer. You've been great. I don't know how to thank you, so I'm just not going to do it because I don't know how. But you've been wonderful. Thank you so much. I don't give away prizes or anything like that, although next week we will start a contest where you can actually win something of great value. I'll tell you about it next week. That'll be kind of fun, a little something to do. In the meantime, boy, I really do wish the best for you. I wish you peace, and I'll be back with you the next time a weekday rolls around, which is really soon. Until then, I wish you peace. A lot of you are asking how you can contribute to my presidential campaign. I don't need your money. I'm certainly not using my own money. I'm just going to use money that I find. You know, like, I'm going to go through... I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'm going to run on loose change. Just loose change. My entire campaign funded by loose change.